This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, September the 19th, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
New York is leading Chicago. We'll ask our panelists how they view the financial market and their impact on the harvest season prices today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. Our panelists today are Chris Corm of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group's office in Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Please tell me if fundamentally you are bullish or bearish the commodity markets. Chris Corm.
Thanks, Todd. Grain fundamentally, I am bullish the markets. I believe the USDA numbers. I don't have a bean crop yet. Could have potential frost. I know they're kind of ruling it out here in the last week, but still haven't got a bean crop, especially in southern Indiana, southern Illinois. I think overall, though, I'm pretty bearish because I think it's a bad deal when a grain trader's, you know, glued to the gold, the bonds, the U.S. dollar, the crude equities. When I'm watching that every day, how important are the grain fundamentals at this time? And I just don't think we're really trading them.
Okay, hold it a second. You confused me. I think you may have confused a few others. So I'm going to guess that this is the case. You're bullish if we're only working on the fundamentals, but New York is making you bearish. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
All right, we'll stand there as satisfied with that answer. Jackie Vakes?
I'm fundamentally bullish grains. I think that's no surprise to anybody. I do believe that the height that we'll go to in the near term is going to be limited by what's going on in the outside markets. But as soon as we start to get combines rolling and we start to see what we need for acreage in the future, I believe then we'll begin to recognize the fundamentals of grain and start to trade that.
And Dan Zwicker.
I vote present.
Don't you mean abstain?
No, in the Illinois legislature, you can vote present. So, in Illinois, we can vote present. I think you have to be friendly to the balance sheet numbers. I mean, at least for what we know today. Now, I think short term here, I think we still have some long liquidation activity maybe take place. Maybe harvest is going to get going here another week or two. Farmers have got a lot of grain sold, so that grain is going to work its way into the pipeline. I think that alone could maybe weigh on the market a little bit, at least on the short term. But fundamentally, I think if you look at raw supply-demand tables, you have to be at least generally somewhat positive. Now, you also got to take into account that we're much above levels of what we were as a year ago at this time. So you have to kind of acknowledge the fact how bullish do you want to be when these corn is at, $5.25 or $5.50 and beans at $11. You have to kind of take that into account.
SEC has been given authority, that's the Securities Exchange Commission, has been given authority to block short selling of some 799 financial stocks through the second day of October with a 10-day auto extension if necessary, but no more than 30 days of authority. How, Dan, do you view this government intervention into the free market? We move from Chicago to New York.
Well, I think the socialists are getting their wish here this week. Like we were talking before our recording, that the insurance company the government just bought itself an insurance company. So we've got health insurance and auto insurance and homeowners insurance. We've got pension plans. We got 401ks. So the government just walked its way into all kinds of services. But I think you initially have to say that the government has made the decision that it is going to do what it can as far as expanding the money supply and pouring money into the financial institutions to keep it as liquid as possible, because basically we were having a run on the bank, so to speak, going on in 1929. It was run on your local bank. The last few days, there's been a run on money market certificates or money market funds, because these funds are not guaranteed by FDIC, and they do have some exposure, asset exposure. So I think that's one of the things that they first mentioned right away, that they were going to guarantee these money market funds right out of the chute. And I think that was supposed to be maybe upwards of $1 trillion worth of exposure. So clearly, the government is going to do what it can to try to calm things down. I don't think it's necessarily going to pass through Congress very fast. Just knowing politicians are going to try to add this and add that, and they're going to argue a little bit. So I think there might be some ups and downs in the marketplace until things begin to get settled down. But it is a good attempt to stabilize things in longer term. Whether or not it works or not, we'll have to see how that plays out.
You know, when I was in Ukraine, the retired people were called pensioners. And when you move to Texas, I expect you to do this if you're going to be a pensioner. They gathered near the statue. So I want you to gather at the Alamo, and you're going to dance with other pensioners.
Well, we're going to succeed from the union. We're not going to let the northern socialists take us over. We're going to succeed from the union, and you'll have to hunt your own deer down here like they do up in Alaska, I guess. So.
Jackie Fakes, how do you see what SEC's authority as we go into the harvest season, does it really have much of an impact on the commodity markets? How do you view that authority? Is it okay for them to come in and say, no, you can't short sell these financial stocks?
Well, I'm never a big one who's in favor of them being able to take away basically what we have as a freedom. But at the same time, I look at it and say, I think they made a decision to try and stop the panic. And never before, we were just talking on the way in here, never before have we had as many retired pensioners involved in the stock market and in these hedge funds. And so the panic that's set in, you have to wonder about that, you know, and the impact that it has in the marketplace. What you don't want to see is a fire sale. And that's basically what I think they were trying to stop, was a fire sale. How does it impact commodities? I think once we get into harvest and we start to see, depending upon what the American dollar does and how it reacts, I think we go back again to focus more on our corn needs and our bean needs.
Well, I think it helped about 400 points today in the stock market. So obviously,
1,000 points in 2 days.
That's exactly right. And I think the doom and gloom we saw coming in Monday and Tuesday sure looks like here at the end of the week things are just getting much better all the time. I think that I agree with Jackie in that. I think a lot of times the market here in the last month or month and a half has really just been trading sideways, looking to see what kind of crop we're going to have. And I think that the grain fundamentals will kick in here pretty quick. But I think we're going to have to see once the combines start rolling.
I must admit, up 1,000 points, but if you can't sell short, which direction are you going to go in the marketplace? Probably up.
Oh, surely you got out like a month ago, didn't you?
I think that's why you have to say a lot of today's strength was scrambling to cover their shorts. And now, maybe next week we'll get into more of a two-sided trade. I think it'll still be somewhat volatile. But, you know, from a pure technician's point of view, you have to be somewhat impressed by the way that the market acted. Basically, the 50% retracement held. going back to the low that we had here a few years ago, about 7,100 or so. So the 50% retracement held. You know, with any luck here, if you have some follow-through strength, you could close out the month of or the quarter here with a quarter reversal to the upside, and technicians could say, well, we're getting ready for the next leg and we're going to go on up to about 17,000-18,000. Mm-hmm. So you know, that'll be some of the bullish spin anyway. We'll see who wins that war, but technically the market did some good things.
I think one of the things that we talk about all the time in the grain market is value and percentages. And when you look at a 1,000-point move on an 11,000 stock index, you know, you get a 10% or a little over 10% move compared to a 400-point move when we were down at 4,000 on this stock market. I mean, we have to keep things in perspective. The true trading range on the stock market right now is almost 300 points a day. That's big. You know, and so if you're looking at that, I think you have to keep things in perspective. You're going to see these kinds of moves back and forth, just like in the grain market.
Yeah, and I would agree, Jackie. The 300 points a day is same equivalent to, you know, 20 to 30 cents in the grain market every day. I mean, a 20 to 30 cent move nowadays, you know, we don't think anything about that. So I guess I think about it, but overall, it's just something we've learned to live with. And if one thing about it is, you know, the dollar's been coming down since 2002. We've been in kind of an inflationary period since that. Well, since mid-July, the dollar's actually increased 10%, and since mid-September, we've done nothing but go back down. So, you know, we reached a little strength in the dollar.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think when you put everything into perspective, as far as the moves in the marketplace, it's change, and it's a big change for a lot of people to make an adjustment to. For years, we looked at a 2 cent move in corn, got excited about it. You know, now it's 22 cents on average. Beans are 50 cents on average. You just look at the big picture, and you have to be able to put everything into context before you run in panic. The thing that bothers me a little bit is the idea of entitlement and not wanting to change and not wanting to have to give anything up. And I think we saw that this week. All these things are changing, and people are afraid they're going to have to tighten their belt, and they don't want to do it.
We probably should talk about the grain markets a bit, too. So let's do that. Here are the numbers for the day. December corn, a 548 top, a bottom at 527 and a quarter. Settled at 542 and a quarter, down 21 cents. December 09 and 576, 22 and a half. We're getting close to the end of our first half of the show, so I'm going to run through some of the rest of the numbers, and we'll talk about them in mass. November high in the beans at 11.57 and three quarters, the low at 11.17, settled at 11.43 and a half. It lost 58 and a half cents from last week. November for 2009 at 11.24 and a half, down 62 and a half cents. October meal was off $23.80. October oil off 59 cents. Live cattle futures, October contract 101.90 on the high, the low at 101.20. Settlement price at 101.55, down 60 cents. September feeders at 108.25, were off $1.65. Lean hog settled $68.20, up $2.10. And the wheat, December contract, a high this week at 7.22 and a quarter. A low at 6.90 and three quarter, settlement price at $7.18, a penny and a half lower. July wheat at 7.62. Down 1 1/4, Jackie, this week. The president of the National Grain and Feed Association told us on this radio station that his organization, which represents the U.S. grain handling industry, is in favor of a compelled loadout for the wheat in Chicago, soft red. What do you think of that?
What do I think of it? Well, I think it's an improvement in some respects. It's one of the situations where I'd like a better definition of compelled loadout. Right now, if you go into the last trading day and your short grains or your long grains, you're either going to take delivery or you're going to make delivery. And so I'm not quite certain the net impact, and yet I think it's a step in the right way, because we need to have delivery points. One of the things that they can't control is who's buying and who's not buying. In other words, what we saw this last year was a lot of buying of Chicago and selling of Minneapolis and KC wheat and holding down that particular price. And so I think compelled delivery wouldn't be the worst thing because it would actually force that market to converge.
Okay, finally, we've got 1 minute left in this part of the program. Each of you pick a commodity. Best advice, Chris Corn.
Best advice, if you don't have any, if you still got 2008 that is unsold, I think you ought to look at possibly, if you buy a March put, you can buy that for 30 cents. That's locking in a $5 base, and at least do that for now.
On corn, okay.
I think price action tells you probably want to have a defensive posture in this market, at least in the short term.
I can't disagree. I guess I'd have to say if you're going to need cash, sell it in cash and replace it with a call.
In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. You're listening to Commodity Week. It's a production of Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Illinois residents enjoyed a week of pleasant early fall weather in the wake of record rainfall, flooding, and high winds from the remnants of Hurricane Ike last weekend. High pressure dominated Midwest weather in the wake of Hurricane Ike, and sunshine and moderate temperatures helped soggy northern and central Illinois to dry out. Another cold front slipped quietly south through Illinois late Wednesday, marked only by a slight wind shift and lower dew points. Average daily temperatures this week ranged from about 1 degree below normal in northeastern Illinois to 4 degrees below normal in southwestern Illinois. There were some scattered showers across the northern half of the state on Monday, but the rest of the week was sunny and dry. As it stands now, even if it doesn't rain another drop the rest of the month, the entire state, except for the far southern tip of Illinois, will end the month with well above normal rainfall. We will see a continuation of pleasant weather for at least the first half of next week as high pressure drifts over the Great Lakes. Some scattered showers could develop about Thursday when another cold front will begin to move through Illinois. However, moisture will likely be limited, so amounts should be light and coverage scattered. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilbert.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, September the 19th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Chris Corm of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Our guest is Glenn Ring. He's the president of Glenn Ring Enterprises, which focuses on providing information, education, research, and support for traders, analysts, and other participants in the futures industry. Glenn produces the bi-weekly View on Futures newsletter and the View on Futures daily update. Thanks for joining us, Glenn.
Well, Todd, you guys sure picked the easy weeks for me to be on.
Well, you know what? I'm going to give you the big softball question. What'd you write about this week?
Well, I had a tough time figuring out. I actually wrote about how calm I've been because I'm very comfortable that I more or less understand what's going on out here. And I did write about the dollar, about what's going on there, because from a technical standpoint, I expected a lot of turmoil here in the last couple of weeks in the markets based on where the dollar index had rallied to. But I also wrote about why people should stay calm and why government intervention was necessary. Even though I don't desire it, was necessary because Bernanke and others, Bernanke in particular, is a student of the Great Depression, and he knew the one mistake that got made in the 1930s was that they allowed the banking system to essentially fail. So wasn't important to me what they did, but that they did something to keep the panic from spreading. So that was really the feature of this week's newsletter.
Tell me about something you wrote about called detonation.
Yeah. detonation, a little play on the word detonation, that the for many decades we've had analysts and writers worry and create worries about how our expanding debt in this country was eventually going to be a bomb that went off. But people don't realize that when it deals with debt and credit expansion, the bomb goes off first. You expand and expand and expand the money supply. Each time you swipe a credit card, you create money out of nothing. It's unsecured money, and that debases the value of the dollar. And then when the debt bomb finally detonates, it implodes rather than explodes. It's like watching a film clip of a nuclear blast in reverse because you see the energy sucked back out of the system. And it is my belief, and it is only a belief because you historically, by studying these, you can't prove them until after the fact. But it is my belief that we have reached the point where the credit expansion in this country that has gone on for about five decades has peaked, and now that we're going to reverse the trend, and it'll take years. A lot of times your worst price damage is done in the first couple of years, but the contraction of the credit cycle usually will take a couple of decades or more. And the reason I'm confident that this will happen someday, whether it is now or I'm a couple of decades early on the play, is that it has happened since time of commerce has begun. And if people question that, debt is even discussed in the Bible and things like that. So, I mean, the debt cycle has been out there forever. And I believe that we're changing the mood. And there's all sorts of anecdotal evidence to support that.
Yeah, you could just kind of watch how the grain market worked here this past spring and summer, basically short of credit, not knowing where you're going to get the next dollar to meet your margin call. And now, we're beginning to see some companies that were on the wrong side of the market now begin to show some of their cards. And it's to the point where you don't know who to do business with. And I think that's what we were seeing here in New York the past couple of days, is that the banks wouldn't loan money to another bank because they didn't know whether or not that bank was solid or not. And I guess, it looks like you mentioned that we're going to go into one of these periods now that we're probably going to go kind of a cash on the barrel head type mentality.
Amen to that. Not only is cash going to become king, we saw this week that cash has already ascended to the throne, and that cash is king. When people got worried that when their money market funds might be frozen, things like that, no longer is it safe to park it, even in what might people consider low-risk vehicles, at least perception-wise. And that is an important part of what's going on here. You reach that point in the society where the societal mood changes. Our grandparents, some of us are parents, some of us are great-grandparents, wouldn't buy anything except for cash, and there's a reason why they learned that lesson. There was a different kind of debt bubble that exploded or imploded in the 1930s. And so it became socially popular to not have debt, and that's the direction we're going to head now, and you reach that because people either desire not to have debt, or they cannot qualify to take on debt, or that lenders won't issue credit. And you're getting all three of those going on in here. And the reason people choose not to take debt when that societal changes is because when the experience of having had so much debt becomes so painful that they won't repeat that behavior. Kind of like holding a bad position in a market without a stop. You don't get out until the pain is so severe that you can't stand it anymore.
Can I ask you a question, Glenn?
Absolutely.
We certainly see reflection of this in what's going on at the elevator level right now, compared to hedge-to-arrive contracts and the risk that was involved on that side of it. But to take it into the American dollar, in your view, what kind of an impact would it have if at the same time the American dollar is rising, that the Japanese yen rises along with it? Their economy, of course, has been improving. How much of a negative is that to us? Go ahead.
I don't think that's a major problem for us because of even though Japan's a major trading partner to us, they aren't the only trading partner. And historically, let me put it to you this way, maybe a simpler way to do this, and it's actually to excuse myself from the Japanese yen question on this, but the dollar index, and the dollar index isn't the best measure of the dollar's value, but it's one that's readily visible. The dollar index declined from 2001 and 2002 down into this past March, it declined 50 points. That was round figures of 40% decline in the dollar. You can see the kind of inflation that we saw off of that kind of decline. Now, if we get a recovery of 35 points, and I picked that for the easy math, that would double the dollar from the low. Not a 40% rally, but be a 50% appreciation. So you just imagine the amount of deflation we're going to have if that occurs. And if the dollar index gets through the highs we've just made, and by the way, I don't expect it to get through these highs for weeks, maybe even months, but if it does, then I believe that we are on our way, going to at least try to get back into that 104, 105 area in the dollar index over the next couple of years. And that would be extraordinarily deflationary.
Hey, Glenn, another question for you.
Yes.
Of course, China is one of our biggest trading partners. I just read today that they've got $3.2 billion in assets compared to a $1 trillion debt. So obviously, even though our dollar's down and world currencies are strong, I can see that economy really shutting down. And, of course, that's going to kill our exports somewhat. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's part of this. I look at a lot of long-term cycles, and this whole thing is a contraction cycle getting ready to start. Our inflationary expansion is over. I wrote that back earlier this year. I stated it, in fact, at the meeting we had in March, that when we were topping gold on almost to the very day we were there, that this was it. We were, that was the end. And if it wasn't the end, it was the beginning of the end of the great commodity bull. Our inflationary expansion, in my work, is over. And the first 2 years of off those tops will be extremely severe, and it's going to spread worldwide, the contraction. So, the one thing that's going to change that is that something extraordinary happens that absolutely debases the dollar. But as credit contracts, no longer are we putting an unlimited rate of growth of U.S. dollars into the world economy. That's what's been beating the dollar down, was not the total supply. Just like other fundamentals, it's when the rate of growth was so big that they couldn't tell you when it was going to end, we kept beating the dollar down. Now the rate of growth of the dollar into the world supply is way below trend line. And that's what's going to change this whole scenario. That makes the dollar more valuable against the rest of the world.
Glenn, we appreciate you taking the time today.
I appreciate it.
Glenn Ring is with Glenn Ring Enterprises. He's the president of that organization, joining us here on Commodity Week. Time now for a final word from our panelist in studio, Dan Zwicker, ADM Grain Group.
Well, I think, there is a lot of turbulence here this past week, but I do think, harvest is going to get going here. Stay focused on being safe, and there will be some marketing opportunities here over the next several weeks, and I think everyone will need to kind of evaluate their risk level at that point.
Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Well, I think we have to be careful when we look at all of the potential regulations that the government's looking at. We can't drive speculators out of our business, because if we do, we take the stability away.
And Chris Corum of Strategic Farm Marketing.
I believe something. We had record exports on corn and soybeans this year, and I think in 2009 that doesn't bear well for world economies shutting down, just like Glenn said just a minute ago. So I think that's something that's really going to have to be watched.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this program and other Commodity Week programs and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer anytime. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. You have a good weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.